From the studios of WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. A new culture of foodies and environmentalists has helped to popularize organic, locally sourced food. And as the foodie community grows in the region, so does the divergence between the people who can afford to make healthier, more sustainable choices and the people who suffer from food insecurity, either not knowing where the next meal is coming from or having to make choices between paying an electric bill or buying food. Today, we're going to explore the realities of food insecurity in southeastern North Carolina, how this struggle contributes to health issues like obesity, and whether there are alternative ways of producing food that might offer greater access to healthy food. Today, we have two people in studio to guide us on this exploration. Jill Wadey is an assistant professor of sociology in UNCW's Sociology and Criminology Department. Jill Wadey, welcome to Coastline.
Thanks.
Also with us today, Evan Folds is president of Progressive Farms and Progressive Gardens in Wilmington. He's also a member of the board of directors of the Title Creek Co-op in Wilmington. Evan Folds, welcome to the program.
Great to be here.
If you have a question or a comment about growing food or food scarcity in southeastern North Carolina, you can send us an email at coastline@whqr.org. You can also give us a call at 910-343-1138. Jill Wadey, let's talk about food insecurity so people who are not familiar with food deserts and that issue in this region can understand it. What is a food desert in the first place?
Well, the USDA defines a food desert as a low-income census tract, which is just one way to measure geography, that is a mile from a grocery store for an urban area and 10 miles for a rural area. So you have limited access to a grocery store if you live in these food desert areas. And the low-income designation is important because they might have less access to transportation, for example.
And how does living in a food desert contribute to a health issue like obesity or being overweight or the myriad health issues that go along with that?
Mm-hmm. Well, living in a food desert is associated with a higher rate of both food insecurity and obesity. Food insecurity and poverty are also closely related, so that's where you see the low-income designation come in. But if you can't access healthy and affordable food, then you're going to have higher rates of food insecurity, not getting access to food, and then you also might have higher rates of obesity. That might seem counterintuitive, but it's because you don't have money to buy these higher quality foods, so you end up buying cheaper, more calorie-dense foods that are less healthy, and that can lead to rates of obesity.
For example, the kinds of foods you're talking
about.
Oh,
so right. So if you are more likely to go to a fast food restaurant or buy something from a convenience store instead of some fresh fruits and vegetables or lean meats that you might buy from a grocery store.
Evan Folds, you started Progressive Gardens, you said 13 years ago, because you noticed that there was a dearth of sustainable farming that produced nutrient-dense food. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. I think that was the first realization that I had is I learned about hydroponics and how simple it was to grow plants and really kind of discovered for myself that that didn't happen at that moment. And it just kind of made perfect sense, you know, cleaner food, closer to people. And that's really what kind of drives us today, for sure.
And what are some alternative ways? We'll get into the details of this as the show goes on, but what are some ways that people in this region can produce food in urban or suburban settings? Because a lot of people think of this area as just sandy and impossible to grow.
Yeah, well, the first thing is to realize the importance of soil. If your soil's not right, you can't grow high-quality food. So we do a lot of consulting for backyard gardeners, home gardeners that allow, you know, using compost teas, starting a compost pile, using organic fertilizers to feed the microbes that make those compost and compost teas, and really getting the soil growing, forget the plants almost. So, you know, that's really the number one thing, and the success of that really comes through having the right perspective of how to establish all of that, and that's really what we do in a nutshell.
Jill Wadey, what are some of the barriers to getting help with access to food here? We know that there are food deserts here.
Do you know how many there are?
Yeah, so in New Hanover County, well, in the Wilmington area, 6 census tracts are designated as food deserts, and then there's a couple more in the outskirts. If you look at the region of southeastern North Carolina, we have 3 persistently poor counties, Bladen, Columbus, and Robeson County, so they have a lot of food deserts in those areas, too. So you do see high rates in this area. Some of the challenges are getting grocery stores to build in some of these areas. They might not feel like they're able to recoup the costs for building in these areas. And another difficulty might be getting access to these quality fresh fruits and vegetables, which is why some of these farmers markets programs are really important.
Well, it's so interesting that you mentioned Columbus, Robeson, Bladen County. These are some of the more rural counties that are part of this listening area. They're part of southeastern North Carolina. You're saying they're farming communities, and yet there isn't widespread access to quality fruits and vegetables and healthy foods. That sounds counterintuitive. Can you explain that?
I mean, it is counterintuitive, but it's not everyone is farming, right? It makes up a small percentage of the people in the communities, and they might not be farming fruits and vegetables for consumption. They might be farming other things. Since they're rural, they're geographically dispersed, so people are living farther from a central area if they don't have access to a car or some other sort of reliable transportation, right? You don't see public transportation in those areas. It makes it really difficult for them to access a grocery store, even if there's one, like in the center of town.
Evan Folds, what do you think about some of the farming practices that we have going on the larger scales? Not talking about backyard farmers here, but farmers who do this for a living.
Yeah, well, to speak to the counterintuitiveness of your point is, you know, I think what is important to understand is that most farming as we imagine it is not really the farming that's going on around us. You know, 3% of the agricultural work revenue that is accomplished in North Carolina is actually for fruits and vegetables. The rest is for biofuels and for grains, for livestock. And even livestock itself, Christmas trees is larger than fruits and vegetables, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, you kind of have to decentralize farming to really understand the types of farming that are happening, and then you can get into the reasons for that and the subsidies and those sorts of things. But it's also a matter of just the way in which the farming is undertaken. When you monoculture and you grow one crop, like in 10,000 acres of corn, that's not really growing a nutritional product, and it streamlines from a business model standpoint. But the result is, you know, generations ago, 70% of the populace was involved in farming. That's less than 1% today. And of that 1%, 45% don't even claim it as a primary income, which is staggering. I mean, that's just a complete revolution in the way that we grow food. And what's happened is we haven't really connected ourselves to what the results of that are, which are food grown for the wrong reasons, in my view, and food grown as a commodity rather than for its nutritional quality. And that really has
what
to
do you
change
mean by that?
To get to the result.
Food grown for the wrong reasons. What do you mean?
Well, I would argue that food grains grown for cows is, you know, first of all, cows don't eat grains. They eat grass. So that is done for an economic incentive. Food is generally, in my view, grown for profit and not for people. And that's something that we really have to come to terms with because, you know, one stat is if the subsidies that allow the meat industry and the livestock industry in the United States, there's estimates that a pound of meat would cost $48 if it wasn't subsidized, which would mean the quarter pounder at the drive-thru that costs 79 cents would be $12. Nobody in their right mind would be able to buy that to start with, but it wouldn't be accessible in the ways that it is. And, you know, what we were talking about earlier, these things are delivered to us in a way that makes sense for the profit of how it gets there rather than what the nutritional quality is for the people. We could, if we subsidize fruit and vegetables, the entire landscape would be different, and we would have, you know, cost-effective, nutritious food locally at people's fingertips, probably more than we would need. So it comes down to the priorities, and it also comes down to using buying power and having a populace that's educated towards how to influence those things as well.
Well, let's talk about access to healthy food for a second. Jill Wadey, we know that people who have means, people in the upper socioeconomic strata, can think about where their food comes from, and they can buy organic when they feel like it's important. But there's a whole sector of the population that can't even make that choice. and there are a couple of assistance programs. What's the difference between WIC and SNAP, and can you tell us what they are?
Yeah, so SNAP is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. You might commonly know it as food stamps. That's what we usually call it. And WIC is Women, Infants, and Children. So that's for pregnant women, women who are nursing, and children up to 5 years old. WIC has a very specific list of what you can purchase on it, whereas SNAP gives you a certain number of dollars per month to use.
And what is the average?
For North Carolina, it's usually about $28 a week for North Carolina, which breaks down to about $1.35 per meal, and that's average. So obviously some people are getting a lot more than that, some people are getting a lot less. But if you think about it, that's really not much food for you to purchase.
So that really is just a supplement.
It's intended to supplement. Mm-hmm.
And what are some of the rules surrounding what, if I'm on the WIC program, for instance, what are some of the restrictions I have in terms of what I can buy?
Right. So for WIC, they very clearly outline what it is you can and cannot buy. So, you know, certain milk, dairy products, fruits, vegetables, meats, very clearly what you can buy with that. Whereas for SNAP, you have a lot more options for what you can buy in the grocery store. But some things is restricted, like you can't buy alcohol or anything with it.
Right. If you're talking about, you said $1.35 per meal is mm-hmm. what your SNAP assistance averages out to?
Average for North Carolina.
So that sounds like a cup of ramen noodles to fill your belly.
And that's part of the problem. It's really difficult to afford to eat healthy if you're on SNAP. And it's intended to be supplemental. But the thing is, a lot of people are making this decision, should I pay for my electricity or use that money for food? So SNAP sometimes is all the money they're spending on food.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking about food deserts in the Cape Fear region, how that affects public health, and alternative ways of producing food. Evan Folds of Progressive Gardens and Jill Wadey, UNCW Assistant Professor of Sociology, are here to answer your questions. You can ask a question by calling 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. This is Coastline.